All right, good morning, guys.
This is probably like 5 to 6 times as many people as I thought were going to be here. So this is great. I'm John. I'm not the pastor. Steve is out of town at the moment, and so it's just great that the remnant are here this morning. My family can't make it. They're either sick or caring for sick or indifferent and just want to play with their Transformers. So let me pray and then we'll get started. God, I just pray again. I just echo that same prayer of God. I pray that we learn something. I pray that we grow closer to what you want us to be, God, that we learn more about what pain is and how to respond to it correctly and the opportunities that you have given us when pain is present in our life. And Father, that's the prayer. Just pray that we learn and that we grow. And thank you for letting us be here. It's an honor to be with your people, God. Amen. So every time I get a haircut, there's a scar that appears on the back of my head. And the story behind the scar is that I think typically when someone is growing up, they're learning how to walk and they're learning how to balance and they're learning how to run, and they fall backwards, they raise their head. As they're falling back, they raise their head to keep them from slamming into the pavement. I didn't have that ability. And so I slammed my head many, many times. I just let it go. I just wanted to see what would happen. And every time it hurt. And every time there was a lot of blood, and now I have a scar back there that's exposed. I have a mole back there too, but let's not talk about that. The thing with it was that I did not respond properly to that pain. The pain was there for a warning, and it was an opportunity for me to do something different, but I didn't respond to it, and I didn't learn from it. And I wanted to talk about pain today just because I think that pain is this thing that causes a lot of people to drift away from God, either drift away or never to come to Him from the first place, is that there's pain in their life, they don't handle it properly, and as a result of it, somehow they blame God, or God's the one that's responsible for this, and they don't respond appropriately to that pain. So see if this seems familiar, that, for example, someone might drift away from God because they had a sister, and that sister was incredibly dear to them, and because of some situation, that sister died. And because of the pain and loss associated with that, they turned their back on God, and they never went to Him again. Or a mother that says a story of her son has this rare genetic condition that causes them excruciating pain every single day. And because of that, because of God somehow imparting this genetic gift of pain onto their child, they're going to drift away from God forever. Or just the classic of if there's such a loving God, why is there so much pain in the world? And I think pain and its potential is something that really needs to be discussed and that a lot of people don't necessarily understand. And I still really struggle with pain a lot because I can talk about it fine here, but when I'm in the midst of it, it's horrible. And when I'm talking about pain, pain is anything from a slight, mild frustration and annoyance all the way up to the deep hurt that lasts for years. It can be temporary. It can last for decades. Pain has this huge spectrum of different levels that pain can manifest itself in. And so that's something that needs to be specified. It can also be really relative. I know that when you're hearing about someone else's pain, if you've gone through something that you consider worse, you cannot empathize with that person nearly as much. But pain is just all relative. I mean, like for me, if I found out that I wasn't going to have milk for a day, I would be okay. But if I found out that if my wife died, I would not be okay, and it would be incredibly painful. For my newborn, if my newborn found out that they weren't going to have milk for the day, it would freak out. But if they found out that my wife was dead, they probably wouldn't really care. They were just more concerned about milk than they were about my wife, even though the two are related at this point. Paul had this similar situation. So Paul, in the New Testament, they had this thing called the thorn. And we don't really know what the thorn was. It was something that caused him, he called it a messenger of Satan, it was so bad. And it was something that tortured him, whatever it was, whether it was something that affected people's impression of him or it was actual physical pain, not necessarily sure. But this is Paul's response. He said, 3 times I pleaded with the Lord to take it away from me. But he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. So, therefore, I am going to boast all the more gladly about my weakness, so that Christ's power may rest on me. That is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weaknesses, in insults, in hardships, in persecutions, in difficulties. For when I am weak, then I'm strong. I'm trying to learn how to write. I know that we were supposed to learn that in like grade school and high school, but I'm trying to get into it now. I'm trying to go through grammar. So this would be my thesis, for those of you people who know anything about English. This is the thesis to my talk today. We must learn to treat pain as an opportunity to change by allowing God's power to be perfected in our weakness. We're gonna touch on that in several different kind of lights this morning. But allowing God's power to be perfected in our weakness, I think that can be kind of confusing, like how God said in that passage that my power is perfected in weakness. And the idea is not that God's power is imperfect and somehow just the raw harshness of pain somehow makes it perfect. It's basically talking about that during our weaknesses, during our times where we can't depend on our own power and our own strength and resources to actually solve a problem, we have to rely on God. And during that time, we are exposed to this idea that God is actually powerful and God will take care of us and God will love us. And so through pain, we allow God's power to be perfected, meaning used, utilized in our life during those times of weakness. And Paul, man, that guy, at the beginning of his ministry, one of the things that was told about Paul was God said, this guy is going to suffer for me. And so if anyone would know about allowing God's power to be perfected in weakness, it's Paul. So we're going to talk about those opportunities of change, those opportunities to change. One of them is an opportunity to reevaluate. One of the most transforming pains that I'd experienced, and it's silly, but one of the most transforming pains that I've experienced in my life was The Matrix. During my freshman year of college, there were several of us that just went to the movie theater not knowing which one to pick. And so we saw this one. It looked kind of sci-fi, fantasy, and so we liked that kind of thing. And so we went and we saw it, and I had no idea what it was about. I hadn't seen a trailer for it at all. I went and I saw the movie, and I absolutely fell in love with it. Oh, my goodness. More than I had any other movie. And it could have had something to do with the fact that it was a computer nerd who was socially awkward, who ended up becoming a superhero, saving the world, and getting the girl. So that clicked with me quite a bit during that time. I'm not the well-polished man you see before you today. I was much different at that time. But I had heard through the internet that Matrix 2 and Matrix 3 were coming out. And oh man, I was excited. Because if Matrix 1 had been so great, surely the sequel was going to be better, as we've learned from a bunch of movies. And so I remember it was like I was so geeked out about it. It was to the point where when when I was actually watching it in the theater, when I was watching Matrix 2 in the theater, I would have been the one, and I didn't because I was classy, but I would have been the one that was dressing up in the outfit, holding my action figures while I was watching the movie. It was like I was that much of a fan. And when I saw it, it's fine. It was okay. I mean, it was a fine movie. And because it was just fine, and it wasn't over-the-top amazing, my heart broke. My heart literally broke by the end of that movie because I thought, this isn't even close to what I thought it was going to be. And I can give you a dozen other examples of that, for sure, of that kind of thing. But this is the basic formula of that kind of thing. I have an expectation for some situation. And when that situation happens, it's not nearly as good as I thought. And then I want to sleep in my bed for 2 years because of that failed expectation. And I think the same thing happened to Solomon, but on a bigger scale. And I love this, how he says in Ecclesiastes, I have seen all the things that are done under the sun. I have experienced power. I have experienced sex. I have experienced respect and love and dignity and praise and honor and food and everything. Everything. I had so much wealth that anything that tickled my fancy, I could get. And all of them are meaningless. A chasing after the wind. And so, is it a good thing that I don't like movies as much? Because not only did that movie, Matrix 2, broke my heart so much, I have never been as excited about a movie since. Period. Because of that. Because of that hurt that movie caused, I haven't really been all that excited. And it's like, oh, I guess we could see it in the theater. Oh, we could wait until it gets out on Redbox. Or we could just not see it because it's kind of meaningless and it's just chasing after the wind. And it's just not worth it anymore. So is it a good thing that I didn't like that movie? And that I didn't like movies after that? Yeah, it's totally a great thing, because when we love the things of this world just a little bit less, that means that there is a hole that God can fill a little bit more. And if our goal and purpose in life is to love God a little bit more, whatever we can do to get to that point, that's what we want to do. So, a little change of our thesis. We must learn to treat pain as an opportunity to reevaluate priorities by allowing God's power to be perfected in our weakness. Just to reevaluate. To take the things that we love and shift them to a place that's a bit more appropriate. We want to take opportunities to reevaluate. We also want to take opportunities to stop. I was driving with my family on the way to El Paso down I-25 through New Mexico. And in my mind, I was going 80 miles an hour. The police officer behind me did not think that I was going 80 miles an hour. He thought apparently I was going 90, which to this day I deny. I was not going 90. But anyway, it doesn't matter. He pulled up behind me. We were on the interstate. There was like no shoulder at all. So I kept driving. There was an exit that was coming up, and I was just going to take that exit. Well, and when we got to the exit, there still wasn't really all that great a place to stop. And so I kept driving a little bit more and eventually pulled into a parking lot for an outlet mall. Well, by this point, it had already been about 5, 6, 10 minutes of driving with him flashing behind me. And he was already on his speaker telling me to pull over. So I eventually pulled over and got there just because I couldn't find any place safe to stop. And as he was approaching, I hear this, "Sir, step out of the vehicle." Well, I was trying to roll down the window. I was pushing the button, but I pushed the wrong button and I inadvertently locked the door. And so I was still trying to struggle. "Sir, step out of the vehicle." So eventually I got out of the vehicle, and he took my hands, put them behind my back, patted me down, asked if I was on drugs, asked if I'd been drinking. We had a conversation where I said I was just really nervous. You were making me really nervous, and I didn't know what to do. He said, you were making me really nervous. And so we had our nervous conversation, and eventually I just paid the ticket. I was not going 90. That's fine. But I learned something. I learned that if there's a cop behind you and you're on the interstate, you pull over. You pull over right there. You don't think about doing something else. You just pull over and you deal with the situation at hand. Because I said, well, there wasn't any place that I could stop. And he said, we do this all the time. You just pull over. We'll make it happen. Okay. All right, let's all calm down. And so that was, for me, that was a situation where I had this pain, I had this frustration, I had nervousness, whatever you want to call it. And I learned a lesson that day. I learned that it was a lesson that I needed to stop doing what I was doing. And I think in life, there are opportunities where when we have a pain, when we have a situation like that, it's something that we need to stop. We don't need to reprioritize it. We don't need to do less of it. We need to not ever do it again. And if we don't, we're bound to repeat it. And if it's a horrendous enough experience where we have this huge pain associated with it, man, we're just going to get that again. And that's an opportunity to stop. Like how it talks about in Scripture that if your hand causes you to stumble, cut it off. Just get rid of it. Just get rid of it. It is better for you to enter life maimed than with two hands to go into hell where the fire never goes out. So for me, sometimes you have to determine, should I just reduce this or should I stop it? That's something that we need to seek God and we need to seek counsel of people in order to determine that. If you're having a struggle between the two, probably should stop it. if we do this again with our thesis statement, we must learn to treat pain as an opportunity to stop harmful activities by allowing God's power to be perfected in our weakness. I love the idea of that cutting off your hand if it causes you to sin. And I'm not talking about actually like cutting off your hand, but in the sense of if you have problems with, you know, looking at stuff on the internet, throw away your computer. If you waste too much time with watching TVs or movies or something on your TV, throw away your TV. I mean, I love cutting away something and then dealing with the reality of that. I think there's a beauty in that. This next one, opportunity for refinement. It can also be called an opportunity for rejuvenation. It can be an opportunity for revelation. You can deal with it as some of those. And the idea is that it's something that you didn't think you had a problem with, but now through pain, you've been exposed to it, and your eyes have been opened that there was this huge thing in your life. This is the verse I was going to use. If anyone builds on a foundation using gold, silver, costly stones, wood, hay, or straw, their work will be shown for what it is, because the day will bring it to light. It will be revealed with fire, and that fire will test the quality of each person's work. If what has been built survives, the builder will receive a reward. If it is burned up, the builder will suffer loss, but yet will be saved, even though only one as escaping through the flames. In the sense of, we are going to be building all sorts of stuff during the course of our life. And some of that stuff is actually valuable that we're building into and building up, and some of it is absolute junk. And fire is coming. Refining fire is coming. And at the end of our life, we may not end up with anything. This is a model of Hogwarts School. And man, it's stunning. It's beautiful. I think, oh my goodness. It's made entirely out of matchsticks. 600,000 matchsticks. It took 3 years to create. There was another one, I don't have a picture for it, but there's another one called the Cathedral of the Sea. It was 4 million matchsticks, and it took 15 years to create. Now, I think they're beautiful, and I have a huge amount of respect for the person that did this, but man, there's a part of me that thinks, that's a waste of time. And if there's a spark, that thing's gone. In my life, I've noticed one that recently became apparent to me that I guess I've known for a while, but really it's beginning to affect me, is cooking. I love to cook. And I would love to just take a whole afternoon and just cook some kind of fancy something. But if I do that, and especially if it goes beyond just a few hours, it ends up being 9 o'clock at night. There hasn't been any supper served yet because I've still been working on it. And my family is mad. And so this opportunity of refinement applies to me in my cooking. That really, all of the time that I've devoted to developing this skill and honing in on my palate and doing flavor profiles is pointless, and it's not going to result in anything that's of value when fire comes in my life. Because if there was a death in my family, if there was a sickness in my family, is my cooking going to matter at all? No, not at all. And the thing is that this isn't just a skill. This can be in the form of bitterness. For 25 years, you could have built up this structure of bitterness in your life, and all of the rationalizations and all of the anger towards someone or something or some event. And when fire comes, that's pointless. It's completely a waste of time to devote all of this energy to something that isn't going to last. It's not just bitterness, it can be in fear. There is a story, it's a great story, in the Bible about the talents. And the idea is that it was a story that Jesus told of three men. There was a master who was very wealthy, and three men were each given a certain amount of money. And it was a talent of gold. And it just represents this huge amount of money. So we'll just say it was $1 million. And so to one servant, he gave $5 million. To another servant, he gave $2 million. To another servant, he gave $1 million. And he went away. He went away for a long time. And then he eventually came back. And he wanted to see what his servants had done with the money. And the guy with $5 million, he had invested it, he'd worked on it, he'd built his empire and his entrepreneurship, and he eventually created a kingdom that was worth $10 million. So he doubled it. Fantastic. So with the guy with $2 million, same thing. Invested it, worked, found people that he gathered together, built a company, $4 million. So he went from $2 million to $4 million. And so when it came to the guy with one, the master said, "So what'd you do?" And the guy said, "Well, I buried it. But you know what I did? Every night I found out where I actually had buried it, and I'd sleep on that. And I created kind of this system where I knew always exactly where it was, and I dug it up and reburied it like 15 times while you were gone. And man, I protected it, and I saved it, and I made sure that nothing was going to happen to it. And I took that money, and I made sure that when you came back, it would be there for you. And the master basically looked at him with, "What are you doing? You could have put it in a bank. You could have had it in a CD or just a savings account. It would have gotten something. But you just kept it out of what, fear?" And it's just such a story of that servant thought probably that he was doing a really good thing. That it wasn't just, you know, out of fear. It was, I have been charged with protecting this for my master, and I'm going to do that to the letter. And when he found out that the master basically turned his back on him, not only was he hurt that the master didn't approve of what he was doing, but it was like the exact opposite of what he should have been doing. So we must learn to treat pain as an opportunity for refinement by allowing God's power to be perfected in our weakness. That revelation of sometimes pain can just bring about, man, I really screwed up, and I've screwed up for a long time, and I wasn't even aware of it. So don't get into cooking. If you can all help it. Get good enough so that when you bring something to the potlucks, it's good. But beyond that, it's just going to go up in smoke, just like the majority of things. Opportunity for joy. Fall semester of 2006, I was down in the basement of the library studying for a final at Colorado State University. The only question on my mind at that time, really, was not what I was supposed to be studying, but should I start a relationship with Liz Farmer? And it consumed me. I have never had such a hard time answering a question in my life. I think for some people, that question of who they're going to marry is simple and easy. But for me, it wasn't a matter of whether or not I liked her. It was more about, am I actually going to be a man now and care for her and provide for her and be faithful to her? And those responsibilities, because this wasn't just a girlfriend. I was actually, it was more of an engagement that I was starting. And it was really, really stressful to the point where I remember one of my semesters, as the semester went on, that semester was just horrible. But as the semester went on, because of this, he at one point pulled me away in class and he said, "John, are you okay? I mean, your quality of work is just dwindling more and more and more." It's like, "I'm fine. It's a girl." Oh, okay. But while I was studying and I was just freaking out about this question, I had to get a break. And so I got out of the library and I went and took a walk around campus. And I had one of those little Gideon Bibles with me. And so I just did a popcorn where you basically just take the Bible and you open up some verse and you start reading. And this is what it was. "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know that the testing of your faith produces perseverance. And let perseverance finish its work so that you may be mature and complete, not lacking anything." Yeah, and I laughed. I thought that was funny. Because that's what I needed. Because it was a trial for me answering this question of, should I step into man, adult level responsibility was totally freaking me out. And it was good, and it was one of many times that God has done that, that he has given me a pain so that I could grow and I could have joy. Another idea that James is basically talking about here, to consider something pure joy, is like this. He's kind of saying, I know you don't like broccoli. I know a lot of the time, whenever you've had it, it's been so overcooked that it's mushy, that it has this weird, nasty, puke green color to it. But let's be honest, you don't like perfectly cooked broccoli either. And you don't like it raw. You just don't like broccoli at all. And this is what I'm asking. I want you to consider broccoli the highest level of food that there is. I want you to consider it more than cheesecake, more than a great steak, more than a great hamburger, more than quinoa, more than kale, more than anything else that you've ever experienced in your life. So much so that you consider it absolutely pure joy when you consume it. Can you do that? Can you consider it far better than anything else? I know you hate it, and I understand how much of a rewiring of your mind it's going to take to get you to like broccoli at all, let alone consider it the best thing. But here's the thing. Broccoli has vitamin C. It has vitamin K. It has a chemical in it that helps fight cancer. And so for your benefit, I am begging you, please consider broccoli as the highest form of food that you can have. Because man, it is good for you. The things that it brings about in your life and in your health and in your body is so far beyond anything else that you really, really need to consider that this is awesome. And that's what he's asking. Consider it pure joy when you face all this junk, all this pain, all of this hurt, because it's so, so good. I don't think that you should go out and seek pain just because there's so much of it, and you really don't have to search all that hard. But if you do, I think there'll be benefit for it. It's not that God actually loves us in suffering situation. What he loves is that when our eyes are open to how good and awesome and wonderful he is in the midst of that weakness of pain, that's what God loves. Because he jealously loves us so much that he wants the best for us. For about 4.5 years, I had a problem with a coworker, and it was a really, really hard time for me. And that ended about 6 months ago. And so now looking back, man, it was really good to have that like thorn in my flesh for such a long time. And it was mostly my fault, I think. But out of it, the fruit of it, the benefit of it, my marriage got better. I became less sensitive to words. I have tougher skin now. And it was really good. I probably need it more. Did I learn as much as I could? No, I couldn't have. But I grew. And I remember when my dad pulled me aside once and he said, John, you know how when you fall down and other people lift their head up? I was like 6 or 7 at this point. John, lift your head up. If you lift your head up, you won't have blood everywhere. And I remember when it came up again, when I fell backwards, I lifted my head because I remember what my dad said. And it didn't hurt. My head didn't split open and there wasn't blood gushing everywhere. It was amazing. God's power is made perfect in our weakness. So we must learn to treat pain as an opportunity for joy by allowing God's power to be perfected in our weakness. So we have these opportunities to reevaluate, to stop, for refinement and revelation, and for joy. mostly because of growth and for understanding more of God's power and his love for us. Father, I thank you that you have given us pain, God, as an opportunity to respond to you, to look at our life and see what's in the way, what's causing a distraction, what's keeping us from learning what you have for us. God, you're so good and you love us so much. Father, I pray that we have a better attitude towards the pain when it comes up in our life, Father, and that we can learn from it the first time, that we don't have to repeat it time and time again. God, thank you for that. Amen.